From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 834, Creating a Data Culture with guests Rohan Kumar and Santosh Jamadagni, recorded Wednesday, May 4th, 2022. Run As Radio is produced each week by Sound Thoughts, LLC. For more information, visit soundthoughtsllc.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Hi, this is Richard Campbell. Thanks for listening to Run As Radio. I have two guests today, starting with Rohan Kumar, who is the Corporate Vice President of Microsoft Azure Data, and has been leading technical product strategy, vision, design, and development of integrated solutions for database analytics and governance platforms within the Azure Data Services. His team focuses on building systems to help customers and partners realize the maximum value of their data, to make informed business decisions, simplify their operations, govern their data, and achieve positive outcomes. And also with us is Santosh Jamadagni, who's the Vice President of Data Platform and Integrations for Mars. I think that's the chocolate company. And he joined Mars back in March of 2018 and is currently responsible for managing global data and integration platforms. And over the last 2 years, he's focused on building platform services that enable product teams to deliver value at 100 times, conform to Mars data security and privacy standards, and optimize the total cost to serve. Welcome to you both. Just get the voices straight. Rohan?
Nice to meet you, Richard. Great to be here.
Great to see you again, sir. I mean, we get to see each other's little video feed here, but it's an audio-only show. And Santosh, meeting you for the first time.
Pleasure to be with you, Richard. Nice meeting you, Rohan. Thanks for the opportunity.
I'm really excited about this. This whole idea of organizations have been gathering a tremendous amount of data. Are they really taking advantage of it?
You know, I mean, and so let me just share a little bit of perspective on this one, Richard, where, you know, if you look at one of the questions that, you know, very early on, I asked myself is like, what's the purpose? Like, why do we exist as an organization? Right? Like, what's, you know, what is it that is the core to our existence? And, you know, there's a lot of talk around this data culture, data transformation. And fundamentally, to me, it sort of boils down to two things. You know, you hear a lot about, you know, every company in some sense is worried about some upstart coming and disrupting them and their industry based on like insights that they get, you know, from the data that they collect. But to me, data culture is like broadly two things. You know, one is, of course, there's technology, there's tools. You have to make it really easy, you know, for all the users of data inside the company. If you're expecting them to make decisions based on data, you have to make it really easy. Mm-hmm. But the bigger challenge, frankly, you know, what I've observed is, it's a lot about a mindset change that organizations need to go through. Because, you know, a lot of times we're so used to opinion-based decision-making, everyone sort of built up intuition, right?
Right.
And how do you sort of, you know, have that intuition be backed by or be augmented through some insights that help you, you know, make your decisions? And I think that's where I've seen some of the greatest challenges companies face is, you know, being able to appreciate that. And that's a big part of, you know, becoming a data-driven organization or having the data culture is having that top-down understanding, say, hey, even when things are not comfortable, where the data is telling us something we may not agree with, we need to listen to that. And I think that's a huge, huge mindset change.
But I mean, in some ways, doesn't this make it easier if you're both on the same side of the problem looking at the data? Because often when we talk about this sort of personality-driven decision-making process, it can be way more adversarial. I kind of like that we have a projector or a screen at the end of the meeting room that has a set of information on it. And now we're working together to decide what does this mean and how do we act on it?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, taken the way you sort of described, right, I actually think is the true power of what it means to have a data culture. Mm-hmm. Because then you're sort of, you have a very consistent frame in which you're looking at any decision that needs to be made. And, you know, successful companies who've transitioned, you know, have a pretty amazing advantage comparatively, in my humble opinion, because now you are very fast in terms of making decisions because there's a whole feedback loop based on insights that is driving actions. The challenge, though, that happens is, you know, where we see the struggle is, hey, if the tech stack is not agile enough, where you're not able to get to that data pretty quickly, or, you know, early on, if you see that hey, you know, you basically have an opinion and you're a senior leader in the organization and the data is not agreeing with what you're saying, so you're trying to discount it. That's the point which I mean, which culturally the, you know, companies need to adopt, you know, which is so important. So it's not just a technology thing. Of course, technology is important, but it's almost like a mindset change.
Sure.
Organizations.
I know when I've done my time at a DBA, like the biggest thing you could, sin you could make is to produce inaccurate data, like to not be diligent around your queries. Because the moment someone successfully questions a set of data and proves it's inaccurate, you've lost a lot of trust that is very challenging to win back.
You got it. You're absolutely right. And I think that's where the tech part comes in, where, you know, it's extremely challenging. And I think, you know, in some sense, what we focused on, and hopefully you'll hear, you know, as in the Mars story as well, where, you know, it's once you get to that place where it's easy, it's almost as easy as, you know, opening up your email program and looking at your emails for the day. Mm-hmm. If it becomes that turnkey, then a lot of challenges go away.
Yeah. And you have sort of said the truth. And Santosh, am I right? We are talking about the Mars company that makes the chocolate bars.
We also are in pet business, aiming to make the create a better world for our pet.
Sure. It's an enormous company. You make a tremendous number of things.
Yes.
So what parts of the Azure data community have you worked with? Like, what is Mars used for Microsoft?
Look, I mean, going back to the point that we were discussing, how do we inculcate data culture in a company like Mars? Mm-hmm. Right. And that's where Azure platform becomes relevant.
Right.
For us, this is about, let's take a step back and think through what do we mean by data culture? Because data culture may mean different things for different companies. Mm-hmm. But the underpinning concept is, how do we take the data, you know, cull out the information insights and put that to action to generate business value? Right. And for us, in case of pet care, when we are on our journey to create a better world for our pets, it's bringing food, technology, nutrition, and veterinary services together.
Right.
Now, when we want to give that connected experience, data is crucial, right? So then the question is, how do we make this data easily accessible? Mm-hmm. I like your opening statement. You are gathering so much data. Is the data useful?
Right.
And for us, you know, to drive data culture, it's about making the data contextual and business relevant, mm-hmm. making the data easily consumable through effective reach and coverage, and taking a data first approach in when it comes to transforming the business.
Is actionable a word? Like, I've seen a lot of reports where it shows us some stuff,
yeah,
but it doesn't tell us, are we doing well, are we doing poorly, or what could we do differently to make something better?
Indeed. And also providing the data at the time of taking the action. Mm-hmm. Because that's where people make the decision, and making sure that the data is available for them to act.
So how timely is timely? Like, does it have to be the data of that day, of that hour? Like, what's the logical cutoff point?
Look, I mean, it's a good provocation. There is a bit of myth in the industry that it has to be always real time, mm-hmm. but actually it's driven by use cases. There are use cases that definitely prompt real time, near real time, and batch.
Right.
We need to be prudent in making the best choice. And the technology stack should be able to support all three scenarios.
I think it's very easy for, and I'm not going to pick on VPs because I've got two in the room, on the everything of real time as possible. But like, if a sales day is calculated by a completed day, the current day is not complete and it's not comparable. So you kind of want yesterday's data is the freshest stuff you really can use.
I would like to challenge that, because in mm-hmm. today's environment, especially when we are working on DCOM, ECOM sectors, we need to make pricing decisions on the fly.
Sure.
And that may call for us to do more real time. Whereas in another scenario where it's more planning driven, I could afford to be more on the batch.
So could I set an interval like hourly and say, this was last hour, you know, what do we want to do for next hour? But I always feel like I want to set an interval. that is measurable and then is comparable with something else.
That's doable, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's a granularity.
And, you know, it's interesting, if I may. I think I 100% agree with what Santosh said, which is it's a very scenario-dependent thing.
Mm-hmm.
Though what I will say is more and more, you know, the trend that we see is, you know, in the past you had like your applications that, you know, line of business applications that were built out that business users were using that, had some interesting data that came out of it, which sort of went into analytic systems. And then, you know, you had some reporting, et cetera, that was done or, you know, things were done behind the scenes or sometime later. We believe we are moving to the world in a lot of cases where, you know, like you look at e-commerce, you look at mobile experiences, mm-hmm. where there is a lot of actions that customers take. Like you searched for something and you didn't pick anything.
Right.
Or an offer was made to you and then you rejected it.
Yep.
Those are very important signals because all these applications today, Richard, are being powered by some sort of a machine learning model, right? Which is sort of understanding the information that you have. So there's a very interesting shift that we, you know, what we are at least, betting significantly on is that the silos that exist between, you know, your databases, your analytic systems, BI systems, governance is causing a lot of problems. And that really needs to go away because your analytics is going to become a part of your product experience, right? Like what, you know, I get shown will depend a lot on three other customers in front of me 4 seconds ago made some decision.
Yeah.
Right. Like, how does that influence what I get to see? And I think that will. And now you couple that with all the privacy laws, right? That's the other big secular trend that we're seeing, which is, you know, what started off in Europe with GDPR, America, California led the way with CCPA,
mm-hmm.
where every country is becoming extremely sensitive about the privacy of their citizens' data, right? So you can't just exploit them and stuff like that. So there's an interesting tension there, which is you want stuff in real time, but you have to make sure that you have the right use rights before you use any data.
Right. You still want to protect the private personal information. But my instinct when I think of talking about data is talking about the finished transaction rather than the incomplete transaction. What can you do about an abandoned cart?
Correct.
What can you learn about that cart as well? Like what made them step off? So this instrumentation of the activities on the site, which is not just, you know, transactional data, but rather that interaction data. That's an interesting, a whole other angle.
It's huge. I mean, that's, you know, the intelligence on that one, that the point you just made, Richard, is for depending on the scale, could be hundreds of millions to billions of dollars in turnovers. Yeah.
That what's the money being left on the table?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's too easy to count the things we landed and not count the things that didn't quite land. Yeah. So should we dig in a little bit on the implementation side? Like it seems to me most data analytics tools before the cloud were too slow for this realistic stuff, that the ETL process, like all of those things meant that it was days before we had models to really explore. It doesn't feel like it's that way anymore, that we're able to do most of this analytics closer to real time.
Yeah, I mean, what I will say is you're absolutely right in terms of the need is a lot more clearer now. The mm-hmm. volume of data we're dealing with is a lot more than, I mean, significantly more, and it grows every year. If I take a look at, you know, some of the architectural bets we've had to make, you know within our data services in Azure, it's really around, you know, preparing ourselves for like, hey, how do we set ourselves for the next 10, 15 years? So it's not just about the volumes and scale that we're seeing today,
mm-hmm.
but you have to believe that they're going to grow in a significant manner and really like bridge that divide. I think you hit on a very interesting point, the ETL pipelines, Richard, which mm-hmm. is, you know, I mean, I haven't met a single data engineer who loves their ETL pipelines.
Oh, no, necessary evil, right?
It's a necessary evil. And foundationally, you know, we are like, as we look at the product innovation that we're trying to land, we're looking at, you know, broad areas like these and saying, hey, how do we just get basically take over that challenge? So how do you sort of, and this is really where, you know, platforms, if you look at how they're evolving, is you pick a challenge like ETL and say, can we just take care of that? Like if the whole idea is that, you know, data has to sort of flow in, you know, in the time frame that they suggest, why can't the underlying platform just make it so easy where the experience is, you know, think of just like how you're using Power BI. I should be able to click a link and say, okay, set this up for me where my data is getting replicated across my operational analytics systems. And by the way, do that in a way that every piece of data is cataloged for governance as well, right? So it's interesting when you imagine like what the products of the future are going to be. It's going to be very different from what we've, you know, historically seen on-prem or what we used to. And we are definitely working on that. So like, you know, we have technologies we've done like Synapse Link, which effectively take away the complexity of, you know, creating these ETL pipelines. Or governance of data, as an example, is not a thing on the side. Every action of yours is essentially cataloged.
Yeah, that no data coming into this system isn't being cataloged for its sensitivity. That's right. In some respect.
It shouldn't be an option because, you know, like if you know, otherwise it's, you know, otherwise how can you sort of say with guarantee that, okay, I'm not accessing any PII data when I shouldn't be if you're not cataloging everything, because you could be at that point.
Sure. And if I don't automate that so that it's always doing it, I'm never going to get there.
You got it.
Like it's always going to bite you. Folks, I need to interrupt for one moment. This is a very important message. This episode of Run As is brought to you by the Azure Data Conference at the MGM Grand Hotel in Las Vegas, December 4th to 9th. You've heard the data Q&A shows published on Run As twice a week from the conference. That is a microcosm of the 6 days of fantastic learning available to you from the real-world consultants and members of the Azure Data team that speak at the show. Learn proven problem-solving techniques and technologies you can implement immediately and gain insight into Microsoft's data strategies for the cloud and on-premises. Get answers to performance monitoring, troubleshooting, designing for scale and performance, working in the cloud, and exploring all the new features of the latest versions of Azure Data and Microsoft SQL Server. And if you still have questions by the end of the week, join the conference's closing session and be part of the Data Q&A show on Run As Radio. The Azure Data Conference is at the MGM Grand Hotel in Las Vegas, Nevada, December 4th to 9th. Use code RUNAS to get a discount on your registration at azuredataconf.com, and I'll see you there. And we're back. It's Run As Radio. I'm here with Rohan Kumar, the CVP at Microsoft Azure Data, and with Santosh Jamdagni, I'm sorry, I swallowed your last name, who's the Vice President of Data Platform Integration at Mars. And we're having this conversation about the data culture, but also that, you know, you've got this new tooling flow and new information coming forward and trying to manage all of that. What is Mars doing, Santosh, to take advantage of these things? Like, is it a dashboard thing, just a constant that the data is always visible?
Yes. So there, what we are looking at is, it's actually the whole tech stack, I would say, mm-hmm. because it's just not the front end. Relating to a previous point that we were discussing, we had a legacy application with billions of data records.
Right.
And it was an, old technology, and we had hundreds of cubes massaging the data. We were not able to expose that with modern visualization tools. However, the data stack that Microsoft provided us, right from the pipelines to store to compute to visualization, helped us to make it more contextual and make the data available for broader consumption.
Mm-hmm.
And this is kind of helped us to open the doors for consumers to, or associates to consume the data more meaningfully.
So what was holding you back from broader consumption? Is it a privacy issue? Is it a distribution issue? Like, what's the hard part here?
So in this specific case, it was more the old set of technologies.
Right. So
yes.
Hard to make available in lots of different places.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
But when we talk about, distributing the data for broader consumption, invariably, it's about how do we govern the data and ensure the data is accessible in the right manner.
Right.
So we have the right information classification policies in place that strikes a good balance between protecting the confidential data and making the data available for the right consumption.
Right.
And then we talked about cataloging. That's crucial for us because otherwise there will be a significant proliferation of the data assets and the solutions. It's also about, look, for me, when we say data asset, it's about how productive are these assets. Because the last thing I want to do is to have data assets, in the platform, not being used.
There's an. These are queries about queries. You know, it's interesting to see a report and say, of the data we're collecting, which ones are being put into aggregates that people can act on, and which ones aren't being touched. And then say, like,
we don't want any non-performing assets there. Yeah.
Why are you collecting this data if you don't use it? I don't know the last time I've seen a report that said how much of this data is actually being used. I love that idea. Like, for if I'm putting on a CIO hat, you know, if I'm responsible for providing information inside the organization, I would love to be able to instrument all of my data to know what's being used. And then when it's not being used, like, are we not collecting it right? Are we collecting something that's unnecessary, or are we just not understanding the value there yet? Like, that's a much deeper level to think about your organization.
Yeah, and to Rohan's point, so we, as a platform team, it's our mandate to make data access easy for both business analysts as well as data scientist communities, right? So how do we make that happen? How do we build that trust in the data that whatever they're consuming is fit for purpose?
Right.
Having the tools, be it catalog or able to certify a data asset on its relevance, calling out under what use cases you can put this data for use so that we are honoring our, agreement with the data source providers is crucial.
Right.
So, and these are the tool sets that help us make that happen.
So that you're using the data the way it was intended to be used. Because you can mislead yourself looking at data incorrectly and or inappropriately too, and say start making decisions that move away from goals rather than towards them.
Yeah.
Rohan mentioned earlier on about this the role of machine learning in all of this. Is Mars taking advantage of these technologies? Like, what can it do for you?
Absolutely. So for us, when we look at forecasting, it's all these machine learning algorithms that come into play in helping us look at the predictive side of the analytics.
Okay. So being able to predict the future, essentially.
Yes. And also scenario planning, doing the what-if analysis.
Yeah. For a given campaign, what expected results should be, like that kind of...
Correct. Especially when we go towards sales and marketing, we look at how is our product dealing being offered for a specific region and specific channel.
Right.
So our ability to quickly model the sales side of it and put this insight at the hands of the sales representative who is walking the aisles of the retail stores so that they can take quick action.
Right. I could say these are the products that are moving for whatever reason, and maybe that's worth building a campaign around.
Exactly.
That's right. It's fascinating stuff. And it's interesting to see machine learning, the way you describe it, is an extension of my business analysts. That this is just a tool that does more of what they're already doing, perhaps faster.
Indeed. And the good thing about this is, we connect to thousands of external sources to bring the data and manage it. This is where we need suitable databases to support it. As well as when we are writing several ML algorithms, we need some discipline in managing and deploying that to production. So things like ML engineering, ML ops becomes relevant. Azure helps us in providing the Azure ML service that we could leverage and we are leveraging to manage this.
I think one of the things just to sort of, add on to what Santosh is saying, a big challenge that we see is, especially in these modern, data stacks, data platforms, there is a big friction point between, data engineers who basically are responsible for setting up the, the pipelines, making sure that, your analytic engines, warehouses, business intelligence platforms, they keep running in production because, your company depends on it. And then the data scientists who are essentially always a little bit more looking at, hey, what are the next set of innovation as a part of the ML ops?
Right.
And you've seen this is a huge friction point, right? Which is, can I go directly to production? Can I basically, because you want to have the most relevant data, if you're a data scientist, but you could basically have runaway queries that take down your production system.
Sure.
Right. So there's a huge amount of innovation that's, we believe is needed to ensure that the collaboration, and we really see, all the way from DBAs to data engineers to data scientists to business analysts, in many ways, they are becoming quite overlapping in terms of their function even.
Yeah.
Right? Like, because, you know, if you're a data scientist, like, okay, how do I quickly connect to all data sources and get everything that I want? Well, guess what? It's not, you know, all that. So it's a very interesting transition if you think about, you know, like how these, you know, silos, the way we've defined these roles, are sort of blurring into each other.
But as you make this data more widely available, I also think you need to create strata where there is a group of folks who are responsible for assembling that data and sort of making sure it's right versus Correct. The folks that are maybe slicing and dicing it from there to find actual opportunities. Like you don't want to share those responsibilities. I would be afraid they would get stuff wrong. Like it's very challenging.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think the, and you're right, you don't want to share the responsibilities. The division of responsibilities is very critical. Mm-hmm. The challenge I'm trying to point out is, you know, that you normally, you know, as these systems are getting a lot more, you know, interconnected, if you will, right? Mm-hmm. There is a desire to sort of, hey, how do I get to the latest data?
Right.
Right. So where, and so the friction comes in is if I'm a data scientist who's like, okay, why am I dealing with something that's 3 days old?
Yeah.
Or, you know, a week old because of some strata that you created? Like, how do I? And that's the friction point that we need to address, going back to even the previous discussion we had.
So the fact that I can create essentially these live feeds as data is coming in, it's being marked correctly, that ETL is a continuous process, it's no longer batch. It's always being organized correctly so that, you know, the decisions you made before, you're being seen reflected in data as it comes in.
You got it.
Yeah, what am I going to do on my weekends, Rohan? I'm confused now. I used to do all the processing then. It seems like it's happening all the time now.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, it also sort of, it's interesting, right? You look at, you know, one of the big pivots, and sometimes it's, you know, these things, if you're not like literally, you know, living this daily, and I'm sure, you know, Santosh and his team basically are great examples who are sort of maybe at the forefront here, is, you know, a lot of people still have this notion of, okay, the line of business applications, you know, something gets input into forms,
right.
And that's how data gets collected. The reality is, you know, the world has so moved on since then.
I mean,
you know, every click on your e-commerce site, every action on your mobile app, you know, all this, you know, if you're a manufacturing plant, everything that the sensor is collecting, you know, you look at, you know, we talk about things like connected cars, connected everything, connected devices, all this is very real, right?
Yeah.
And the funniest part is, you know, you look at even data aggregation. It's not just in the cloud. I mean, most of the data is actually on the edge devices. A lot of the intelligence happens to be on the edge devices. And really, like, that's the world we are moving to, right?
Sure.
I mean, in some sense, we're already living in. And so, you know, when you sort of, you know, look at it like that, everything is continuous.
Yeah.
It's just happening all the time. Now, you look at what that means for reliability of these systems. I mean, they have to be like, they are so mission critical.
Yeah. Well, and I think about the intelligent shopping space now. We're talking about instrumenting shelving. Like, it's one
That's
thing
right.
to talk about discarded shopping carts in e-commerce sites. The other thing to see someone hesitate at a shelf, pick up your product and put it back down again and say, like, what happened there? But I see this data starting to come into the retail space now, where that's the level of identification, that they could see that the shelf wasn't well organized, or the products were missing, or the thing they were looking for wasn't there, or there's something on that package that didn't work for them.
That's right.
And this is a great point, right? And this is where we are able to leverage the native cloud features. Like, think about scaling up, scaling out,
mm-hmm.
Reliability, able to surface active syncs and things like that. That's making our life a lot more easier. If I were to think back 10 years ago and now, life has changed.
Mm-hmm. And it's, I mean, you now have a set of tools to make a lot of this stuff come true. It's hard to grow it from just a vision to scratch. But at least if you have a menu of tooling, at least you can start putting those pieces together. I mean, how many of these things are distinct to Mars and how much are there sort of standard KPIs that you can get out of the box?
Look, today it's mostly out of the box.
Okay.
And that's what makes it easier for anybody to leapfrog and embrace these technologies, right?
Well, that to me is really exciting because it means that anyone listening to this could reasonably get to a place that a company as extraordinary as Mars has gotten to and say, you know, these are standard features, just put them together and get your team on board and you can make it happen.
Correct. With the right set of capabilities, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. That's very exciting. I want to be sensitive to your time here as well. Are there some new things coming down the pipe we need to know about?
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the big announcement that we recently made at Build Richard, is this whole notion of what we're calling the Microsoft Intelligent Data Platform, which is it's a very significant pivot of from how we've sort of thought about data offerings in the past, where you look at we had operational databases, great offerings there, BI and analytics systems, and governance platforms. And I'd say, ever since we had the cloud transition over the last 10, 12 years, we've been very focused on building best-in-class services in each of these.
Sure.
And the more we've sort of if you look at just the discussion we've had, the integration, right? Where the challenges really come down to the seams now, right? How do you sort of get that data available for analytics? How do you do that in a way where it's cataloged all the time for you to have up to the second governance, which is very reliable? So for us, that's a huge pivot where we're looking at the breadth of our portfolio and investing heavily in integrating them through capabilities like Synapse Link, Purview being deeply embedded. And the other big part, what I'd say, Richard, which you're super excited about, is the work we're doing. One of the questions we asked ourselves is, hey, what's unique to us as Microsoft as a company? How do we, we have business users who use Microsoft 365, Dynamics 365. We have citizen developers who use our PAR platform.
Yes.
Right? And how do we basically, or developer community, which is sort of, so rich at GitHub, how do we increase their value of their data if they use our data platform? Right? So that was an interesting question that we asked ourselves, and there's been a significant amount of work there, all the way from, Power BI being deeply embedded as a sharing mechanism in Teams, and that being deeply integrated with Synapse, and Synapse getting integrated with Purview and our operational databases, right? So there's a lot of things we're very excited about. And like I mentioned, the big thing for me is I do believe the products of the future are going to be very different from the way we know and use them today.
It sure seems that way. For a long time, it was cloud was the platform and you moved your existing workloads to the cloud. Now it strikes me that cloud is more of an architecture that it runs in the cloud and you can use your on-prem stuff too, but you got to kind of comply to our architecture as well. But don't worry, you'll be beneficial of that. I watched Purview managing not just my cloud assets, but my on-prem assets and going,
you got it.
My on-prem assets are better for following this architectural approach.
That's correct. And I think, ultimately, if you look at it, right, the question we ask ourselves is, whether you're a developer, a data engineer, a data scientist, a business analyst, how do we significantly improve the experience then, right? So today, that's one of the things. You look at the cloud transition has been great, but mostly the jobs to be done are very similar. The tools have gotten somewhat better. But, for us, what we believe is the next wave is an order of magnitude shift. So just like when you think about, what Power BI did for a business analyst, right, where there's so much of self-service, respecting all the guardrails that IT needs to put.
Sure.
We believe developers, data engineers, and the data scientists really, their experiences really need to evolve like that.
Well, and the fact that guardrails go on at the data intake point so that they propagate up into these integration tools. We don't have that barrier to entry where it's now you have to figure out what the security should be on this. No, you've been doing it since you brought it in.
Correct.
Yeah. That to me seems like an important shift for thinking about this thing collectively, that we, as it's intaked, it's categorized. And then from there, we get to take advantage of these tools. I love this naming, though, this from the Microsoft Data Platform to the Microsoft Intelligent Data Platform.
That's correct.
Okay, because we're getting the roles in the first place. Any resources folks should be looking at? I've grabbed a few links along the way, but places you want to point folks to, Rohan?
We're going to have a whole landing page for this that explains the value prop, the investments that we've made. And just a couple of technologies, what I'd say for your listeners, Richard, is really looking at for me, foundationally, the approach, and I'd love feedback on this one, is we really believe analytics is going to be an integral part of the product experience, not just a backend thing.
And sure.
Governance of data really gets integrated. So I'd love, for your listeners to sort of, maybe share their feedback, after they look at some of the capabilities that we're releasing. And because I do believe we are at the beginning of something that's going to be a very significant change, in the field of data and the use of data at large.
Excellent. Rohan Kumar, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you.
And Santosh, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciated your contributions here. It's a great story.
Thank you.
And we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.